Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet? It is Monday, March 5th, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio episode 139. Yes. That's 139 episodes, which seems like a big number to me. Like, I think somewhere around like 130, it struck me that's a big number. And 39 feels extra big.
I wish I had 130 minutes to fight a fucking dragon in Monster Hunter.
I know, Patrick. I'm Austin Walker. That was obviously Patrick Klepek.
The game's bad. The game's bad. I take back everything I said about it.
Everything positive you've said. Also joining us, Danica Herod.
Hello.
Who also failed to kill a dragon this morning. Yep.
But I already killed it. So Patrick can sulk. I'm kind of sulking, but I already killed it, so I'm not tripping too bad.
Apparently, we needed Austin Walker on the horns in order to take us over the finish line.
Right, of course. And Danielle Riendo, any dragon-based failures in your life recently?
Or every day is a dragon-based failure, really. Especially on Mondays.
Yeah. I get you. Yeah. I get you.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. Mondays are the biggest dragon in our lives. Agreed. Agreed. What happened? Tell me about what's up with Monster Hunter. Y'all have continued to play. I've kind of fallen off. Not for lack of loving that game, but just for needing to do other work stuff.
I want to beat. So, like, I feel
you're close.
Like, it's slipping away from me. Like, I felt it last night when the Oscars were on, and that's something that, like, usually my wife and I watch a lot of movies, and like, mm-hmm. been lucky enough, like, being part of a union that, like, I get screeners, so it's like I get to do the thing that not a lot of people get to do, which is like see pretty much all of like the Best Picture nominees, mm-hmm. like before mm-hmm. the Oscars, and so it's like really cool to sit down and watch. She unfortunately got a stomach bug and was unable to watch the movies or watch the Oscars with me, and so I was like, well, I still want to watch the Oscars. Like, I'm rooting for Jordan Peele, and I'm still rooting for Guillermo del Toro. I was like, well, maybe I could play some Monster Hunter too. So I dragged a computer monitor out and set it up next to my projector so I could watch the Oscars. And I was like, I'll just grind on Monster Hunter for like 4 hours. And I did. And I had this moment where all I want are Anjanath fangs pluses. Seriously, all I want is, like, I've wanted to get the fire.
Right.
I want to get the fire hammer up.
And I have a bunch of teeth on that thing.
I needed four for like the one upgrade I needed, and then I needed five more for the upgrade that gets you into rarity six, like whatever the one that gives you the blue carving.
Right.
I have fucking 35 of every other thing, and it will not drop thing. I fought an Anjanath like 12 times while watching the Oscars. Every time, Austin.
Monster Hunter is weird.
I'm even doing investigations where you get the silver and gold
tiers,
because like those are supposed to be like the like increased chance that you'll get the rarest of things. But no, they give me a Wyvern gem, which is also super rare and hard to get. But I don't need Wyvern gem. I need a fang. Like, I could literally, if I could tweak the rewards, it just said give me nothing or give me fangs, but an increase. So anyway, this is like a long way of saying, like, that wasn't fun. Like, none of that was. Like, fun or interesting, and, like, that's the path I wanted to go down, and I guess you could criticize, like, oh, just go do something else, but, like, that's the thing I wanted to do, and it wasn't fun, and so now I feel like I just want to beat these Elder Dragons, I want to beat that final boss, and, like, I'm ready to kind of just take a break. Like, I've just, like, I've hit, like, my wall on that game in a way that I'm really enjoying it, and the Anjanath path, like, that was going to make me start disliking this game in a way that, like, that's not I want to leave on a high note of bashing an end boss dragon in the head with a hammer and go, cool.
I did it.
See you at Game of the Year, Monster Hunter World.
Right. Instead of what's happening now, which is just kind of disappointment.
I'm in the same boat where I'm like, I've basically completely plateaued, and I'm just like trying to finish the story. And like Patrick mentioned, it's I have been playing through like most of the game with my boyfriend, and there will be times where you're going and you're doing the same exact fight and you're doing the same quest and you're doing the same thing, and like there have been a million times where my boyfriend's gotten like five things that I need and I just don't get them at all from that fight.
And is there trading? Can you trade like materials?
No.
You can give consumables. Like, I wish there were even just like high cost to it, right?
Hey,
like if a player wants to give you this, like I don't know, I don't know what the risk reward structure would be.
Guild box where I can dump in the extras. Like, oh, I know I'm not going to make anything with this weird fish scale. Here, you can have this. Right. Go for it.
I guess I can see like hardcore fans saying like, well, you know, like this is part of what makes Monster Hunter Monster. And I do agree that like the fun of the drop. It's when the ratio is off, right? It's not. I am 100% with people who love this series that say like fighting it three times, and the one time you finally get like all that three set of like fin plus that you need, it's like, whoo, I'm gonna go get that hammer. Like, I get that part of like the risk reward and the gamble of like each fight, but it's just I like the ratio seems to like I've identified something that I think is actually off. Like, I think the fang I cannot recount. Well, I'm honestly thinking that I was like, how could I possibly be this unlucky this many times in a row? It just seems like the balance is off somewhere.
That's happened to me too. So what happened to Patrick and I this morning was we went to fight the Kushala, the first Elder Dragon.
What's a Kushala? Oh, sorry, you just explained. Okay.
It's the first Elder Dragon. We went to fight it. There's a 50-minute time limit. We were kicking its ass. Like, I think we were doing really, really good at that fight to start. Like, none of us carded. Mm-hmm. We were doing really good damage. And then midway through, we went back and we went back to camp and we ate. And then we were still kicking its ass. And then it was like 10 minutes
it's like
left.
A big wind dragon, right?
That's it's a big wind dragon, and it spends a lot of time hovering above the ground. Yeah. And I think our problem was like our character setup were two very like low to the ground attacking players. And
right.
So
we're both melee.
Yeah. And so you can use, flash pods to bring it down, but you run out of those pretty quickly. Or what we did was like, you know what? Honestly, like the mistake that we made a lot of, we didn't make any critical mistakes. I think we just made like mistakes on the margins that added up at the end to like putting us just outside. Cause we had them down to the skull. We didn't pass out. Like we weren't actually having a hard time with the fight. We just weren't doing enough DPS to like get it over the finish line. What we probably should have done was like realizing that the flash pods are critical for our characters to stay in the race was that we needed to be keeping flash bugs with us. So mid fight, we could just one person could be crafting more flash pods.
Right.
So that they could have been bringing it down. Cause what we did was like, we wasted probably 30 minutes of that fight being wait for the boy to come down.
Yeah, we had to wait for him.
The skull was on the screen.
Yeah. The
you
skull
got some
was on
good,
the screen.
Good climactic hits of just like jumping off of things. It was great. And then didn't close it out.
But this happened when I fought him the first time. It said I had 5 minutes on the clock. And then in the last like 30 seconds is when I beat him.
It's a tough game. It's a tough game. Keep checking in. I need to find some time to put back into it because
I just want to finish the game.
We need to. I know you got stuff to play.
It's tough.
I think we need to find a way so that we can
We're close.
Right. Yeah. We are 10 hours from the finish line.
That's
because I think we should.
That's all.
I know. Oh, hey. Believe me, I'm well aware of time.
I know you
but
know.
I think like on stream we need to fight that final dragon, and like all three of us can then wash our hands. Monster
we don't
Hunter
need
World.
To go up to Hunter level 90 or whatever, right?
No, I'll come back when the they Hunter add. Rank. I'll be excited to come back when they're adding new monsters. Like I some of them already leaked because of a guidebook, and they look pretty cool.
I bet.
But then again, I said that of PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, I was like, oh, I'll go back when they add stuff. And actually,
we have not.
Like, well, it's hard for me to tell. Like it. Did the temperature run too hot? My fever went away, and it's just, I don't need that game anymore. Or does that map suck?
I like that map, and I think
I don't think I like that map.
They're fixing it. They're fixing it, though.
Are they? Are they patching that map?
Yeah.
What's wrong with the
they're
map?
Lacking cover, basically, I think is the main thing. And they're adding new stuff to that map.
Okay, we should go back to it. Like, I missed that game a lot. I like that game a lot. And we went from, like, playing it every day to playing it once every 3 weeks, like, even privately. And so, like, I'd be pretty eager to check that out. I've been thinking about it a lot because I've been playing a different game that is sort of that's being compared, let's say, to PUBG. It's another game in which you hunt monsters. It's a game that has hunt in the name.
Okay, please tell me more.
It is called Hunt Showdown. Showdown.
Yes.
Which, like PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, is a terrible name.
It's so bad. When like the game became popular, Austin, like Danica was actually the one who was kind of pushing for us to check it out.
Yeah.
And was like, hey, can someone go request codes to see if we can cover this, or at least see if it's worth covering? And so we did that, and then, like, Austin, like, pinged me. He was like, hey, Patrick, like, you have a code. Like, it's in your email somewhere.
Yeah, they emailed say, like, hey, we sent Patrick a code.
And then I went, looked, and I was like, oh, right. I deleted this because I saw, here's a code for a game called Hunt the Showdown. Delete.
It was originally apparently called, wow. I'm, like, looking up some info on this. So it's Crytek. A studio that has not released many games recently.
And crucially, has treated their workers like shit.
Like shit.
Yes.
And has been like on the verge of collapse on and off for years now.
Yeah. Go look up Jason Schreier at Kotaku. Has done a lot of really good tracking of Crytek's labor issues. They have gone through their financial troubles, which obviously creates stresses in any work environment. I'm sure that is not easy for the higher ups. They have not paid people for a long time and done other stuff.
It's been lots of like, hey, you owe all of your people a lot of money type stuff. They sold off parts of their company to Sega. There's like been a lot of like, they're clearly in the middle of a big weird restructure, and I hope that they figure shit out and start treating people better.
They sold their engine to Amazon, right? Which then became Lumberyard.
Which became Lumberyard, correct.
Is this the original title right here? Hunt Horrors of the Gilded Age?
Yeah, that's where I was going to. You just skipped ahead to the last thing I was going to say, which is originally it was called Hunt Horrors of the Gilded Age.
Wow.
Is that better or worse?
I think it's better because it at least speaks to like what it, like, this Hunt Showdown could literally be a game where you hunt deer. Like, it's a hunting game where now there's also Bears Showdown, you know, or
just
something.
Just call it Horrors of the Gilded Age.
Horrors of the Gilded Age. You know, it's kind of
fine.
Is Hunt a brand? Like a special brand? Hunt.
Hoga.
Brand.
Horrors of the Gilded Age.
Hoga.
Good.
HDA.
On lunch, I want to get some hoga.
I want to get a good. Oh. I miss New Jersey.
A hoga sandwich.
I used to get a nice hoga. Yeah,
okay,
so.
Hoga's here.
So it is a first-person team-based, two-person team game where you and five teams total, I'm pretty sure, it's 10 players, go into a kind of a swamp, like a Louisiana bayou.
It's like a bayou, yeah.
It's like a bayou, kind of rolling swampland with some forests and bushes and rivers. And there are a bunch of locations on a map. You open a button to open up a map, just like PUBG. There are like, I want to say, 10 locations, maybe more than that, maybe like 15 locations spread out across the map. You are bounty hunters of a sort of Lovecraftian horror like era, like West, like Wild West, just post Wild West, Gilded Age, right? So like 1910s, 1920s, is really where it's hitting. And so you have like, you know, revolvers and repeater rifles and, you know, single or double shot shotguns. And you're going in to hunt supernatural creatures. The map is filled with regular zombies, and there's also kind of special zombies. There's like one that sends bees at you called the Hive, and she's real creepy. Good. There's like a big armored one that just has like scrap metal attached to it. Yeah. We found one last night, Danica
the
and
meat,
I.
The Meat Man or something?
The Meat Man. I don't think it was called the
it
Meat
was,
Man.
He was the Meat Delicious. Something.
He was the Meat Something.
No, he's the Meat Man now.
He had meat in his name. But
like
he
a
was,
meat packer?
He was like a big.
I don't
like,
think it was the meat packer.
Are you sure?
I don't know what he was, but he was
That's
big.
That's my favorite football
the
team.
Big man. The big, meat packers.
The meat packers.
Anyway, and then there's always a boss. And there's the goal of any given round is to find the boss, kill it, banish it using a sort of like spell, I guess. And then escape with these two bounty coins that you gain from killing it. The two monsters, the two like bounty monsters right now are a spider. It's like a big spider, I guess.
All right, well, I'm not playing this game.
And well, you go, so you can choose. You can choose that
can choose.
Or, the,
okay.
or the butcher who is like the butcher
the
meat from...
Man.
No, it's a different,
the meaty.
This is the thing. Oh. No, there is the
Austin
meat man.
Austin thought it was the butcher, but the butcher has the butcher. A pig head, and this guy right. didn't have a pig head.
Oh my gosh, so he levels the butcher up. Hates himself then. If he has a pig head and he's killing other pigs...
No,
I think there's some deep psychological weight
there.
No,
I think
there.
He killed the pig and put the pig on his own head. I don't think he has a pig head. He's not like
How
a chimera.
How do you breathe in that thing?
You're undead.
It's like
you
alpha male type
no,
stuff,
this is
you know?
It is.
I'm trying to understand. There's a lot of depth here.
This is what peak performance looks like. Okay. Big man with a pig head on his head.
Big pig
on his
man.
Neck.
The game also has a lot of other things that aren't necessarily enemies, but like sounds that you can
yes.
trigger in the world, like crows. If you see like a group of crows and you walk anywhere near it, they'll launch up into the air and get all loud. So they let other players know where you're at.
Where you are. So that's the yeah. thing is, it's like PvPvE, right? So there's PvE, you're fighting zombies, you're trying to track right. down this monster. What happens is you go to a location, you kind of hit E to bring up detective vision, and it's like, oh, everything's black and white, and then there's some blue sparkles off in the distance, and if you go to the blue sparkles, you'll find like a weird ground thing, a weird like cairn on the ground that you hit, and it turns into a weird like portal clue that says, oh, now you know it's not in this like northern half of the map. Then you get another yeah. one, and it closes off a couple of different districts,
there's
and then
three,
eventually
there's
it
three
zeroes
clues.
In.
There's three clues, and each clue gets rid of a section of the map.
Right.
And
so
once
like
you get the third
in.
Clue, it tells you where the boss is.
And so then that. You go fight the boss. But that's what the other four teams are also doing. And you're also competing against each other. And so there's lots of like, all right, we know basically where it is. And so someone will like set up a trap on the way in to try to get you, or somebody else will try to rush in. Mm. And you can tell, you can hear them fighting it. You can hear the gunshots going off like 100 yards away, or inside of the church where they're fighting it, or inside of this weird compound. And so you're like, all right, I'm just going to fucking wait out here until they get it. And then I'm going to close in on them when they're weak. And if they get it, one of my favorite things is this effect of like, again, you kind of goes into black and white detective vision when you're trying to track things down. And when they have the coins, instead of being like a little blue sparkle or this kind of blue beacon that it is when you know where the monster is, it turns into like this thunderstorm. This like lightning storm is happening in this other realm where you're like running into the lightning to try to chase them down. And it's really the moment to moment.
So they can kill the boss
yes.
and then be taken down by other players who are waiting
yes.
for them to do the
yeah.
hard
so
work.
They have to,
the
they have to extract.
Yes. You
and
get
extracting
to one of three
takes,
extraction points on
yeah.
the map.
And extracting mm. also takes some time. So basically you can
yes.
like track them down and kill them.
Or well, you can ignore the PvE and
yes.
focus just on the PvP.
The PvE gives you money and
experience
fuck, there's
points,
all this other
yeah.
structure, right?
Okay.
So you have... You have characters who are permadeath characters. If you lose them, they lose any XP they have. They lose their equipment. They lose anything you bought for them. And so you're constantly kind of churning through characters as you play.
You lose them totally. Like you have
yeah,
to like
so
go
I'm
in
saying,
and recruit a totally
new,
new person.
Unless you don't die. And so
right.
the way that you make kind of account level experience and money by killing enemies, by killing PvE enemies, mm-hmm. As well as by killing other. So like there was a moment yesterday when we were playing Danica where we had like a good run. We still died in the end, but we probably made like 200 bucks or whatever.
We killed 28 grunts. And like killing enemies is dangerous because if you use your gun, you're like alerting people to your location. If you walk, there's glass
right,
on the
yeah.
floor. If you walk over the glass,
people will hear
it's loud.
That.
It's
there's
like
dying horses who will start neighing really loudly.
If you get close, yeah.
It's creepy as fuck. It's like really interesting because I think, you know, we've talked a lot about the PUBG aesthetic and the sort of like mm-hmm. non-aesthetic, you know, whatever it's
yeah.
going for. This is one of the first times I've seen a game go like, oh, we need to own the aesthetic in a way that is a draw, like in and of itself, so that players will put up with some of the bullshit. Like
right.
the servers are fucked. The
optimization is fucked.
It's terrible. It runs like shit on my PC, and I have like a decent PC.
Yeah.
I think the basic structure is really rough right now in terms of like how you recruit people into your team. How it's only a two person squad right now. We're not talking about
right.
four person teams. Like it's in a kind of a rough and early place, but
it has something.
But like, dude, there's a book. Danica pointed this out to me last night. The lore. There's like a lore book in this game
yeah.
that is just like a collection of fake newspaper clippings and train tickets
yeah.
and like all about the supernatural. The what was it called again? It was like the Louisiana incident
the Louisiana
or something.
Something, yeah.
Purchase, I think. No,
no, no.
But it's been,
it like explains why this part of the world is all fucked up and weird.
So like why there are bounty hunters and like. Yeah.
It's very cool. It's like Battlegrounds is like tense enough. You know, you're in like this world with like 99 other people and everyone's coming for you. But this is like you have these four other teams who are after you on top of like just the scariest like horror movie shit going on. Like the sound in that game
is
like
my thing.
Absolutely incredible.
I'm so excited for it to get to be better. Like I think it'll it is the best reloading animations I've ever seen in a video game, and I know people love the RE4 reloading animations, and the Resident Evil 4 reloading animations, very good. But there is like this, because you have to, you don't, okay, so here's the thing that happens in most games with revolvers. They just have like the quick revolver load, they have like the what are those called? Like the quick loaders or whatever. Where you like, they open the revolver and they dump out all the shells. And then you like put in the whole load all at once, like six bullets in there, and then you snap it back. And that's cool. In this, you don't have that. So you like open the fucking barrel and are pulling out each individual shell and dropping it and then putting in a new one over and over again. Same thing with the shotguns.
Clunk, clunk, clunk.
It's so rewarding and it's so scary because there are just zombies everywhere. And so there are times where you're like, oh, I'm shooting at the zombie, and like click, oh shit, I have to reload. Mm-hmm. Open the gun, like stumble to get the bullet out, put the new one in. It's really cool. And that stuff is, it communicates character and communicates place and setting and time in a way that the other games in this genre, like Evolve, I think really dropped the ball on its aesthetic, even though this is kind of a similar game. You know, it's about hunting a big monster. Though in this game, you currently at least can't play as any of the monsters. It's not like Left 4 Dead or Evolve like that. But I don't know. It's something to watch. I think that it's again frustrating because the Crytek stuff is so shitty, and it's frustrating when you know that there are clearly developers who are busting their asses to make something really cool under conditions that are unfair to them. And it's one of those things where I really hope that this is the sort of thing that, like, even if it just gives them a cash injection to start, just fucking pay your people. Just pay your people, you know?
It's also hard to tell with Crytek because, like, different divisions, like, they have lots of studios all over the world. Right. So it's like,
Is that this division?
Like, I couldn't tell you. Is that this one, or was that a different one, or was that from a different story 2 years ago in which, like, they went through some shit?
It's weird.
It's funny that you mention this game, and we're talking about this game, we're talking about in the context of PUBG, because I think, like, none of us really connected with Fortnite. Like, those games, sort of like PUBG and Fortnite kind of came, not exact same time, but, you know, same period, and then PUBG or Fortnite really took off, like, even exponentially more so when it added its own battle royale mode. And in some ways, I think we all kind of took a side and been like, yo, kind of shitty Fortnite, like, we're gonna stick with PUBG, even though that's the game we liked better. But Fortnite, it's always interesting when a game starts to reach, like, I think PUBG is, like, I'm not sure where it is on, like, phenomenon status anymore, or if it's just evolved into just a very popular video game. I think it's out of phenomenon status, and now it's just a big popular video game that will have lots of people playing it. And like Fortnite just keeps going up,
right?
And to the point where, like, when people in my life start asking me about a game and they don't know anything about video games, or have a very tangential, casual relationship with video games, like my wife's sister asked before she was leaving the house a couple days ago, she's like, 21, and she's not really into video games and knows what I do for a living and stuff. She's like, what's up with this Fortnite game that all my friends are playing? They won't leave the house to be social because they just say they're playing Fortnite. And so I was explaining to her what the game was and stuff like that. But it, like, really, between that, seeing, like, folks like Chuck Todd and, like, other, like, just the way that Fortnite is talked about.
Right.
Like, it is, you know, I'm not saying it's the new Minecraft, but it is in that cultural sphere of, like, it's being talked about in a way that, like, very few video games ever get anywhere close to being. And in no world would I have ever predicted this game, because I bounced off Fortnite so hard that I was just like, it's whatever, this shit,
it's on
fine.
My list. So I played it,
but I feel like I need to go back to it now.
Right,
but
that's the thing.
Too many people like this game. Okay, I'm not really into building stuff, but there's something to here that I clearly missed.
So that's the actual thing with me, is I really enjoyed the single player. I don't know if any of you spent time with it. Not the single player, the horde mode stuff I enjoyed.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think the colorful character design, all of the kind of like the character class stuff is all really appealing and like had a great aesthetic and had a great vibe. I was really frustrated by not only the sort of feeling of it being an opportunist play to do Battle Royale first on consoles as a free-to-play game. Like, it really felt like eating somebody else's lunch. But also with what happened then with the original mode, which just felt like it was sidelined. You know, like, it gained a subtitle so that it wasn't just for that wasn't Fortnite anymore. That was Fortnite Defend the Night or whatever, right? Or whatever it was called. And it was kind of like shuffled away. And as someone who liked that game, I was like, man, fuck off, which is like a real petty thing. It's like a real, it's a real non-journalistic, non-critical thing to do in some sense, because it's like, this is a big thing. Like, there is, it's almost like our Kingdom Come discussion again, right? Which was like, all right, why am I not covering this thing? What's happening here? And it happened to all be happening in the fall when we all had a billion things to cover anyway. Mm-hmm. And so when it came to prioritization, it just got low priority in that way. But now it's February, and like, the next big thing on my plate is probably Far Cry 5 again.
That's March.
Fuck, it's March. Oh my God. End my life.
Yo, but they're adding jetpacks to Fortnite. Right, jetpacks sound pretty fucking cool.
So the big one for me is actually that I understand that they're changing the combat mechanics, like the way that guns feel. And that was one of my actual big complaints with that game, was just like, I don't like how any of this feels. This isn't how I want a game like PUBG.
It feels squishy or something. Totally, like, I didn't play enough to like, but that was, I remember I only played 3 or 4 hours of the co-op mode, but I just remember being like, I see what could be cool here. It was like, one, the building stuff is just not a mechanic that like gets me into games. But two, the combat like just felt like squishy is the best way I could have described. So then when I heard like, oh, they're adding a Battle Royale, I was like, why? Like, PUBG, like, forever its problems, and it clearly has a big cheating problem that I think is eating is a huge reason. Like, but the fast iteration that Epic is doing and responding to players, and the predominance of cheating seems to be like two gut level reasons why those games are diverging in some ways. But also, yeah, like, it was like, oh, I was loving PUBG so much. It was very precise and specific, and the game did what you wanted it to do when it wasn't glitching. But whereas, like, a squishy bullet is, like, maybe, like, the last thing.
Also, I'm bad at the sort of weird quick building stuff, and I don't want to get good at it. I'm like, that is on me partially, because it's just like, oh, I don't want to get good at it. So I'm not going to wrap my head around this thing. Right. That's the thing.
You know?
But it's so popular. Like, I feel the same way that for years I was like, I should have played World of Warcraft just so I could have spoken to what that was. But, you know, for better or worse, I feel at this point I feel a cultural obligation to, even if I don't end up liking Fortnite. Like, I'm not saying just because it's popular means that I need to enjoy it. But I would like to be able to speak to that game in a way that is more authoritative than, I don't know, the Bushits was squishy like a year ago.
right.
It's been in the news, too. It's like,
it has been in the news.
CNN.
It's
so
like the big
weird.
Fucking college game. You know, like, you go on Instagram and you go look at popular posts on Instagram. Fucking Fortnite is
everywhere. It's a free-to-play game that's like made by a major studio. That means it has a degree of polish. Like you said, it has a lot of attention. When I say like I'm not good at it, and that's sort of on me, the thing I'm actually trying to say is actually, or to the degree that it's not on me, is like when I look at a game like Monster Hunter, when I look at a game like PUBG, part of what's amazing about those games is that I wasn't good at them, and then I got better because the game encouraged me to learn and get better. Mm-hmm. Whereas like And because they presented a sort of play at which it appealed to me to get better. But when I watch high level Fortnite play where it's just like people quick building huge towers or defensive wall structures, like I think it looks neat, but I don't want to do it. Like I don't. It's like watching League or Dota where I'm like, this is clearly taking a great deal of skill. I'm impressed by it. I think that whoever is doing this looks and like clearly understands the mechanics at a really high level, and that's laudable. Not me, though. I'm good.
That's why you play with people. And this is what I have a bunch of friends now who have moved from Battlegrounds to just playing Fortnite every single day. Mm-hmm. And my friends who don't like building, they just group up with people who will build, and then they like, you know, you play with people who like to build, and then you can focus on shooting shit.
Well, Austin, let's go play it together. You don't like building and I don't like building, so we're set.
So we don't have to like building together. Perfect.
Come to our no build island.
I'll
no
volunteer
building
to build. I hated Battle Royale. Like, I hated Fortnite the first time I tried it, but I also haven't tried it since.
I'll update it. It has controller support. All four of us could play.
It has controller support.
It's on PS4.
It's on PS4.
It's on consoles.
So.
Oh, really?
Okay.
There you go. Have you seen it and been like, oh, yeah, I want to do that?
I've seen it.
Good. Good
answer. I don't know about the second part.
I also don't like how it looks. I might
off-brand
Team Fortress 2 alone in that. I don't like it looks like one of those like knockoff cartoons that you can watch on Netflix, but like only ever came out on Netflix, but really it came out like 10 years ago and just no one knew about it, you know?
They got purchased as part of a deal. And I know a whole deal.
I know a lot of people who like how it looks, but the first time I played it, I was like, oh God, my eyes, what is this? I'm so overwhelmed.
I don't think it like looks bad. It's not like I look at it and want to throw up. It's more I look at it and I say, or I could play BioShock again.
Right. Yeah, that's
the natural tendency of anyone in this world.
That's what a normal person says, yeah, right?
Or you could play BioShock, Danielle, maybe
your decision to do that is what invoked Bethesda to tease Prey DLC. Which I'm surprised you have managed to like control yourself to not like immediately talk about.
Yeah,
it sounds like they're doing.
You take all
Moon
responsibility
DLC.
For Prey, and I'll take responsibility for Yakuza. And
there we go. See, we've split now up our division of labor. You guys have to figure out who shoots and who builds. We figured out Prey and Yakuza. You know, we can do it. You can do it. Yeah, I was very excited to see that. And I'm sort of trying not to hold my breath for too much. I mean, you know.
If they're going to do it, like, my thought would be, if they're going to do any DLC that, like, from what I've heard, like, about what's happening, like, post, like, Dishonored and post Prey, is that, like, there's going to be a movement away from immersive sims, like, both like sort of like industry large
Pour
and like
yeah.
within like Arcane, which is not surprising. Like if they're gonna you know do a last hurrah, then like you would hope it's gonna be like they didn't have to let Arcane do what they did with Dishonored. Like they put like Bethesda makes enough money and that you would like it was I don't want to say it's nice of a corporation to let them do
that.
You know
nice
what I mean?
Like,
but it was nice to say, not as nice of them. I'll say it was nice that Dishonored was allowed to come to a conclusion where, like, it feels like Dishonored, like, if it never comes back, it was laid to rest both in its mythology and its mechanics in a way that feels like it finished what it set out to
on
do.
A high
could
note.
They have done.
Yeah.
Yes, they could have done
note.
More.
Yes.
Death of the Outsider is a tremendous. Like, if you play nothing else of Dishonored, if you just play Death of the Outsider, I think you would have a really terrific time. And it really kind of brought the series full circle mechanically and narratively.
Yep.
And if Prey is not destined for a sequel, and if Arcane or Bethesda as a studio, as a company, is moving away from that sort of thing, like, you would hope they would give them latitude to do a Death of the Outsider, like, big, you know, 8 to 10 hour, like, something for Prey that's like, and now we're going to put a cap on this and go find out, like, what's after the immersive sim, which is its own exciting question, given how talented a lot of those people are, if they end up staying there and then deciding to try and answer that question themselves. But, like, I guess I would ask you, Danielle, like, other than just, obviously, more Prey is a happy Danielle.
Hell
like,
yes.
What do you actually, because that game was like, you know, I thought it was too long and I wish it could have been more focused.
Yeah.
But that's me. But when you look at the things that you liked about it, if they were to tighten that into, like, you know, somewhere between 6 and 10 hours, like, what is it that you'd like to see them focus on? Like, what do you want from that DLC?
Absolutely. Well, just, I mean, there are areas of Prey that are not amazingly focused and that are not inherently, it doesn't necessarily show you how many ways you can play something. It's not immediately obvious that you can do 300 things in a room, for example. Something that really, really does a good job of showing that would be amazing. Like a giant room that has, you know, 7 general possibilities for how to go about it. And then within that, you know, the 5 to 8 other kind of possibilities you can go down that road. Something that really shows that, because I think that was the problem with Prey, is that it really doesn't show how deep the systems go unless you're the kind of player who needs to scratch at the surface, which is who I am, which is why I loved it so much,
right?
But something that actually shows that for more people, I think would be amazing. I think other people would really enjoy that and really enjoy sort of experimenting with stuff if they knew how much stuff was possible, basically. Mm-hmm. And something that encourages not only that, but also encourages all that kind of level design that supported that so well. Mm-hmm. The ability that it gave you to kind of break the game using the glue gun everywhere, for example, to, you know, you could build your own staircase to heaven with a glue gun and like beat the game in 10 minutes or whatever. If you wanted to, you totally could. And that's amazing and beautiful. And I love that. I'm hoping with how talented that team is that they can actually create level design that makes sense for that. And that kind of really brings that up. Because I think there were a lot of unfinished things. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that Prey had sort of almost an unfinished area that was hinted at in certain ways. It was like a certain lab or something they kept sort of referring to and some of the, I know I'm going a little too deep here. But anyway, cool. I think something that maybe sort of makes sense of the story in that way, if they're doing something that's concurrent with the story events of Prey. And otherwise, they're hinting at the moon. They're hinting at another sort of story thread that was in at the moon, which would also be cool. They could do something with... I'm excited about the idea of microgravity. Like, not microgravity, like 1/6 gravity, like the moon's gravity, because there's a lot of zero-G stuff and then everything else is happening in normal gravity. But the kinds of things I could imagine them doing with an immersive sim in lower gravity would be intense.
That'd be really cool. Yeah, definitely. I'm really curious about, because you've been playing through BioShock again.
I just finished it again, and those challenge rooms, which I never played before, are awesome.
Nice. Yeah. I'm curious about that because, like, so BioShock found a huge audience by being kind of a lighter immersive sim, right? Like, really leaning into combat puzzles, combat chests, like, solutions based on... It offered the sort of expressivity of what we think of in terms of an immersive sim, in terms of, like, a bunch of different ways you can go about getting through this room, except the room was 12 splicers and a big daddy.
Yep. And some oil slicks and some water. Yeah.
Right. Some water and some loose electricity, you know, electric wires and whatever, right? And some turrets and all these other things that interact in a way. And in doing that, I think they opened up that genre to a lot of people who would have never played it if it was the stricter, you know, even if it was the thief style immersive sim that was still primarily combat focused, or not combat focused, but
stealth focused,
throwing people into the death gulch focused,
the corpse gulch, focused.
Whatever it is. Or, you know, instead of the sort of like, we're hacking every computer and we're reading every terminal and we're crawling through every vent and all of that stuff. Like, that stuff's in BioShock, but not as much as it's in a lot of the other games in the genre.
For sure.
I'm curious if you think there's a version of that for Prey, or if you think that is somehow betraying what makes it work, or I guess that's my question. Mm-hmm. Really what it is like, I can conceive of a world in which they do the thing you're saying, which is like, oh, make a game that appeals to a broader audience by showing them all the depth. And that feels to someone like you who likes looking for the depth as being like, oh, everything's really up on the surface now. I can see all of the things immediately. I'm not getting that same dig into it thing. Like, how do you think that they can balance the sort of like broad appeal, but also keeping it as dense as it is the way you like it?
I mean, I think that's what the main game is, because I don't think 99% of people played the same game that I did, basically, right? 99% of people did not spend 80 hours on their first playthrough finding every stupid thing and every, like, ridiculous thing you can interact with. So, like, they made that surface level game, that the very story-based game that I think most people played. I don't know. I just don't think the game does the greatest job showing other people, like, how, you know, how much fun that depth can be and how much more fun it is to, you know, use the useless weapon to basically open terminals through that little slit in the like indoors, and those are like security stations, whatever.
I can use the Nerf gun to hit the button through the little slot or whatever that opens the door. Yeah, a lot of the stuff just they don't show you that you can do it.
Right.
Though I guess my biggest thing, and this is the thing that's like we've come back around on a couple of times with immersive sims, is like the scary thing is that, like, not scary, but like the frustrating thing is like, I think that's fun. You think that's fun. Mm-hmm.
Nobody else gives the first shit.
I think about the Death of the Outsider bank heist that has an optional objective of not making any noise at all, or not being seen by anybody, not waking anybody up, because I did the version of just like putting everybody inside of the bank to sleep.
Same.
And that one's
extremely difficult.
It's extremely difficult, and it was so rewarding to do.
It was amazing.
And like, but I don't know that appeals to as many people.
Nobody.
As
yeah.
And so it's like, I don't know, it's in such a tough place. I'm very curious to see what these teams do next, because they're so talented, especially at building worlds and building places and writing characters. And I want to see, like, even if that's just more of the action side of immersive sims, the 12 hour instead of the 40 hour, maybe I'll be happy.
I mean,
it'll be
a 12 hour thing that I'll take 40 hours to go through, which is, you know, the norm.
It all evens out.
It is interesting.
I mean, just being forced to reinvent it, I think, is healthy. Like, as much as I like the Preys and Dishonored of the world, like, those are just iterations on games that I've played before, and like dropping that in a new context, I think, is oftentimes the best thing for people that are fans of it, and, you know, possibly for wider audiences. So I'm all for it's hard to imagine that, like, there's no world where you can kind of imagine that Arkane's like, hey, and go make turn-based strategy games, right? So it's like the studio is staffed and expertised at certain things. Uh-huh. It's just a matter of like how they contextualize that could be really exciting to see. Like there's a way in which like just because mainstreaming of it is maybe the wrong way of putting it. It's more just about like how you contextualize and the appearance and the interaction with it.
Right.
And I don't know. I think that those people are too smart to not find creative solutions to that problem if what they're being asked is, if you want to make the same kind of game, you got to find a new way to get people into that kind of game. And that could be a healthy thing for the genre.
Let me pitch you.
Oh.
Prey 2.
Yep.
But it's a mix of Prey, the 2017. What year is it? 2017. And Prey 2, the game that never came out.
Yes.
You're a bounty hunter.
I would
love it. You're an intergalactic bounty hunter.
You have a beanie.
Yeah.
You got a beanie on. You can do the cool slide. You have all these bounty hunting tricks. It's an action immersive sim in a cyberpunk alien city. And also, the mimics are there, and they're slowly oh, you know what else it is? It's a remake, a flashback for the Genesis and the SNES.
But a good one, not that shitty one from five years ago.
Not Fade to Black. Yeah, not that
There's
one either.
A terrible remake.
Not that terrible remake. Because the story of that is like a weird mimic alien species lands on Earth and starts to... It's just that. It's just give them the flashback license and do that.
I'm so into it.
I'm good.
I love it.
We made it.
And I would, you know, I feel like
call
with that
me
team.
Arcane.
Exactly. Arcane should give you a little ring.
Call me by Arcane.
The Oscar winning peach loving.
Call me
game
by Arcane. Yeah.
Hey, I just came up with the title for the podcast.
We did it.
There's
right?
always fruit in Arcane
right
games. Works
call
out.
Me by Arcane.
I would pretty much play anything that those folks make. Right.
Totally.
It's one of those like the five studios that I would play pretty much anything that they make. But I've always sort of imagined that things will go in a more Titanfall 2-ish way, maybe, in terms of, like, oh, amazing level design, and maybe there's a level that's kind of not experimental, but a little bit off the beaten path of what you usually get, as opposed to, I don't know, playing Bioshock again has made me appreciate Prey even more, which I didn't think was possible, but in terms of how deep those systems go. So, you know, well, we shall see. I'm just glad that Prey maybe has this last little gasp of air. This last little tiny, like, the AED pads are on its chest, and there's a little, like, electricity there, and maybe it'll breathe for a few seconds.
Let's take a quick break, but I want to talk a little bit more about Bethesda and stuff right after that. So we will be right back and take a quick break. All right, we are back. It's funny because I had kind of pushed Bethesda out of my head a little bit, I think, until we got the E3 invite for their
E3.
They had a mimic on it. That's why the DLC talk came up. And then that got me thinking about going back to playing Fallout this weekend.
Good.
And I can't.
That's what you did?
No. I thought about it. I watched a lot of videos about mods. I reinstalled Fallout 4 and New Vegas on my PC. And I love New Vegas. I think it has problems, but I love it. And I like 4 more than most people. And I especially am interested in what a version of 4 looks like now with a lot of PC mods on it that I haven't dug into. But modding takes forever. Like, I have to dedicate a night to getting to, like, find the 7 mods that I think look cool. Do you know what I mean? And I just had that mode was in me this week. And I'm curious if this ever happens with y'all. Like, this is my question bucket question this week is I had this thing in me this weekend that was like, I had like a bunch of side shit going on this weekend that was like really stressful and really frustrating. But so at night I was coming home and being like, I want to play something. I want to play. I have like an itch I can't fucking scratch. Partially it was because I'd been playing Hunt, and Hunt, the Horrors of the Gilded Age Showdown.
Hoga.
I was playing Hoga.
Hoga.
And the guns were so good in it that I was like, I really want to play a game that has good guns to shoot, but like not modern ones. So like, I guess Fallout has those sort of. I guess I could install like this or this. And I was just like staring at my Steam page, staring at my Steam library, looking at games I could install, thinking about whether or not I wanted to mod them, watching reviews of mods on the internet, watching you know, going and reading reviews on Nexus, going to Wikipedia or like game wiki pages to look at, like to remind myself of what I liked and didn't like about a game. Think about starting Metro 2033, Redux, like all sorts of stuff like that of just like, and I couldn't fucking commit to anything.
Oh,
all
no.
I could do was just look at the various options. And it reminded me of, Vinny Caravella over at Giant Bomb, kind of one of the stories that he's told me in the past that's really stuck with me was like sometimes he gets this for real life things where he's like, I think we need a new bathtub, and then he spends a week researching what the best bathtub in the world is, or you know, whatever it is. We need a new vacuum, and then he wants to solve what vacuum he should order from Amazon. Mm-hmm. And so he just like spends the week doing that, and it's this terrible urge. He doesn't have to order the vacuum at the end. He just needs to have that feeling of like, I found the thing. And that's what I had last night, and Saturday night and Friday night with games, was just like, I can't figure out what the itch is I'm trying to scratch, and insofar as I have all of these options available to me, I'm just caught in a trap of like, what the fuck am I doing?
And you ended up going back to Hunt Showdown.
I played a little bit of Hunt Showdown. I actually went back to Far Cry 4 in the end, actually.
Okay.
Because I mean, the thing is, like, I would be playing Far Cry 5 for review if Code was in, and that would be scratching that itch because it would have the productivity angle on it. It was like, oh, I'm working on this thing for review. but without that, like, left to my own devices, left to the world of games ahead of me, knowing that I wanted to play something that felt like Hunt Showdown, but that ran well on my computer or my consoles, mm-hmm. I just couldn't find it. And so instead, I just spent that whole night looking for something. I'm curious if any of you have ever had that sort of like, I have a free night open and I don't know what to do with it, so I'm just going to waste it looking at a list from my Steam library.
That's been me. That was me like pretty much all last week. I like to spend my nights watching trash TV, like reality TV. I've finished pretty much every single season of Real Housewives, and like I peruse Netflix and Hulu like every single night looking for stuff. And so last week I was like, okay, well, I should start a new game. What game do I want to start? And I picked up, because Titanfall 2 was like $5.99, I picked up Titanfall 2, and I picked up The Witcher 3, which I haven't played, and I also picked up Okami HD because I've never played Okami. And I haven't started any of them.
Yep.
But every night I'm like, okay, tonight's going to be the night I should really start Witcher 3. Maybe I'll stream it. And then I just sit on the couch like going through my PS4 for 3 hours and end up watching reality TV.
What happens? Why are our brains like this?
Because Jersey Shore is good. You know, good.
I'm not here to say that.
I watched all Jersey Shore. My wife and I were very into Rock of Love.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that shit.
We discovered how, you know, I'm sure you've all experienced this where, you know, you think, oh, I'm just going to watch this one reality show. And then halfway through, they tease, you know, they figure out who's the character, the standout. And then the spinoff is like ready to roll out by the time you finish that season. So you never get off the train. So we went on the Rock of Love train. and eventually the apartment, when I went to work for G4, the apartment that we rented, was this. It was supposed to be this really expensive complex because it had like hot tubs and like pool, like stuff that I could not afford on the salaries that me and my wife were on. But they had just built it, and so they were just trying to fill people into it. So they were offering temporary 1 year 50% discounts on the lease. So the lease you were signing was for like the $3,400 lease, but you were getting it for half.
Right.
And so we're like, fuck, like, this sounds awesome. And it was half a block from where I was working.
Oh, my God.
So,
that's the dream.
What we discovered living there was that we just see, like, different characters is the perhaps the vaguest way to like we would see. Sometimes I'd look down my hall and there'd be a bunch of people, like, doing dance routines. And I'd go over and ask, like, what? Like, what are you – where you weren't here last week. They're like, oh – we're with So You Think You Can Dance, like, we're performing tonight. Oh. As it turns out, what they started doing, like, the temporary fill spaces before they had actual people to sign your leases was, like, reality shows would just book whole swarms of rooms, and then they would just put people up there temporarily. And so that's why you'd get So You Think You Can Dance and American Idol and these other people that would kind of cycle through parts of this apartment complex. And one time after work, my wife and I were like, we're going down to that hot tub. We get a beer, like going to relax. And we look over. I'd have to go look it up. But like look over and it's like, are those two women from the season of Rock of Love that we are watching right now on TV?
Yeah.
I was like, did we watch them go have dirty sex with Bret Michaels on a recent episode and we're all in the hot tub together right now? Yes. We didn't get out of the hot tub. We tried to engage in conversation with them. Didn't bring up the show. We're just like, what are you doing here?
And God. Anyway, that's so funny.
Wow.
That's
real my chance reality of love. Show story.
Tub of love. Right there is beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Tub of love.
Tub of love. We might have a second episode contender. Fuck. Oh man. Yeah. Wow. So that's where I've been at. Like, obviously, I've been playing. I played some Hunt. I played some. I've continued to play Into the Breach. I know, Patrick, it sounds like you're having a harder time with that than my little corner of the internet is.
I'm enjoying it. I'm just. I'm trying to. It is relentless. It is difficult.
It is difficult.
It is. I am getting better. Like but yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm not necessarily always having a good time with it. And I just, it's one of those things where it's like, if I put in the time and I was able to get that hump, I just don't know if I want to spend the amount of time where I'm not enjoying myself. Like, it's just that, is that worth it? Right. Or could I be doing other things that are like a better use of time? But then I'll have like a set of matches that are like, fuck, like, okay, yeah. Like, I see it. Yeah. Like, I see what people, I guess part of my problem is I unlocked another set, another squad that I am complete dog shit.
Which squad do you unlock?
The one, the main mech, has the electric whip.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That can like, chain, uh-huh. Which he seems cool, but it's just the way they set your initial squad up and Into the Breach, is really based around pushing enemies around tiles.
Yep.
Like, and yes, that's a huge part of the game more writ large, but like they give you a lot of tools for doing that. And those strategies are not applicable to the other squad that I have picked. Like, maybe in general practice, but like you have to relearn the game and your conceptual
every squad,
thinking.
Yeah. Every squad is like, oh shit, there's a whole type part of this game I've never thought about before.
Yes. So then I wonder if I'm going to enjoy this game, would it be better for me to just focus on the basic intro squad, which I know is like plenty of people I've seen have beat the game
a great squad.
With that squad, and that I should just beat the game that way. And then if I feel like there's still an itch, then I can go down the path of other squads and find other more creative ways to beat the game. It's a slick game. I am enjoying it. I'm just trying to figure out like the way.
Here's my tip for Blitzkrieg, which is the whip squad. Mm. Two things. Two big things. One, the electric whip mech has an upgrade that you should get immediately. That is the whip works through buildings. That immediately changes everything.
Oh,
Suddenly like, oh, I'm nowhere near that other enemy, but because there's a chain of buildings, I can hit through that.
Wow.
So that's
huge.
One. There's actually two other big ones. Two.
Okay.
The hook mech. You know the hook mech?
Yes.
It has it has one level of shielding on it. One has like a shell armor on it, which means it takes one less damage from any like regular damage source, which means it can be the conduit you need. It can be the fuse that connects two different chains together and take only minimal damage when getting hit from it. So that's big. And then three is the big rock thrower can do damage by throwing a rock. But again, the rock can fit in to a slot that connects things with the whip chain. And so once
game doesn't explain any of that.
No, totally.
And never would have even conceived that throwing the stone would have done
what
that.
What would happen is you'd throw the stone randomly and then like line up a whip and be like, oh shit, right, of course it can pass through this. It's a thing on the map. And that's like, it comes to you that way. And so I'll say like maybe do one more blitz run and then go back and do your basic run again, because the thing that's happening constantly in that game is you're getting better at using that basic squad even when you're not playing as them, because you just become a lot more cognizant of the battlefield and of how where things are and about how aggressive you should be versus how defensive you should be. So I would say give it two more runs, do one more Blitzkrieg squad run, and go back to your basic squad. I bet you can get a win with the basic squad. I'm like so deeply in love with that game. I'm gonna probably try to get all the achievements, and that's gonna be very hard, but I'm pretty committed to it.
I'm gonna jump in soon. It's my next thing for sure. Well,
I'm excited.
One of my next things for sure.
Well, you're still finishing up with Where the Water Tastes Like Wine.
I sure am.
Again, disclosure. I wrote on that
on
game.
It. Half of the That's people I know. Half the people right. on the game I know.
Yes, exactly.
Not half the people I know. That'd be weird. My dad didn't work on that game.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure.
How sure are you?
The accents would be so different if my dad worked on that game. Instead of like southern drawly kind of accents,
yeah,
it'd be like,
yeah.
And then we went to Boston and then this happened. It was weird.
Any updated thoughts on just, Where the Water Tastes Like Wine?
Yeah, I can briefly talk about that. I'm working on a piece right now about that specifically, and about I was kind of struggling with finding like an angle to actually write about this. I am really enjoying the game. I am enjoying the sort of general conceit of it is a storytelling game where you are just collecting stories and sort of rehashing those stories, and they grow out in the world in their own ways, and that's a cool conceit. And mm-hmm. of course, the writing is awesome. Whatever, shout outs to the people I know, and disclaimers for people I know. But it's a really lonely game. It's a really, really, really lonely experience. You are a skeleton man in a cowboy hat walking across America by yourself, unless yep. something changes radically at the very, very end. I'm several hours in, and I think this is the game. You're by yourself, and you meet up with people, and you talk to them, and that's sort of your, you know, the only moments of companionship are when you meet people at a crossroads, almost. And it got me thinking, I took a road trip, you know, almost 10 years ago now, across America, and it was one of the greatest trips in my life. It was one of the best experiences. I went to all these amazing places, and I did all these amazing things, and I don't talk to any of the people I went on that trip with. Mm-hmm. I was dating somebody, and that lasted, like, 3 months or something, and, like, it's okay. I don't mind that I don't talk to any of those people anymore, but it does matter that I experienced it with somebody mm-hmm. and that it was not a lonely experience at all. Right. It was like a wonderful, enriching experience for my life. So it feels a little weird to be kind of recreating that in certain ways. Not obviously the one for one, but like recreating it in a really sort of tangible way as a lone skeleton man who never actually has companions and never actually shares any of these things with anybody else. So it's this really fundamentally lonely feeling that I'm getting when I'm playing it, which is interesting. And I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it is part of the text. But it makes me feel like,
yeah,
am I a little weird for feeling so alienated by the fact that I'm doing this alone? Like, well, I would never want to go on a big trip by myself. And I don't know if
you're
that's
also
weird.
You're not only doing it by yourself in that game, right? You don't have a story of your own to tell.
Right.
You only ever tell other people's stories. You only tell stories that you've heard from other people, rather. And so whether that's the little stories that you pick up from around random places, or when you sit down and talk to one of the main like characters, yeah. one of the other travelers, you're telling them stories you've heard from other places, and then they in return tell you bits of their story. They say, oh, this is where I was born, or like they say, hey, you know, I used to work at this fish mill or whatever over here, and now blah blah blah. You're never saying, here's who I am. And that's like a really distinct thing, even I think inside of the space that this game comes in, right? Like I think about something like 80 Days yeah. as being a cousin to this game. I love, 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 love 80 Days. If you haven't played 80 Days, please look it up. It's on PC, it's on iPad, I think it's on Android. It is a fantastic game in which you play as Passepartout, who is the valet of the dude from Around the World in 80 Days. You're the one who's like booking his travel and carrying all the bags and is kind of like directing him through the world. And it's a steampunk, it's kind of like a post-colonial steampunk world.
Yeah.
Very, very eager to dig into the politics of the world. Is brilliantly written. Meg Janth did an incredible job on that, and the design is fantastic, and it's beautiful, but it's also a game where you're not lonely, partially because you always have a companion in the guy who you're the valet of, which is like, that's fair, but like that you're not a friend with him necessarily, you work for him, but all along the way you are meeting people and sharing experiences with them. You're meeting like the Russian spy, or you're running into death in Louisiana and having like a night out with him, and or you're like all of that stuff is constantly like, okay, here's an experience in which you are embodied, and it is about like Where the Water Tastes Like Wine, about stories and about mythologies and about, you know, where people came from and what they're trying to do with their lives. But it is also much, much more about being with those people and having your life intersect with them, and that's a much different thing, which is an interesting distinction that I wouldn't have seen until you pointed it out just now. Now these two games that have been in my mind as like orbiting each other, now I understand what I think of their relationship at least. So that's interesting. You're gonna write about that sometime this week,
yes,
right?
Hopefully very soon.
Cool. Awesome. All right. Let me. What time is it? It's getting there.
It's getting there.
You take a very quick dip into the question bucket. What's our? What are you? How y'all feeling about that? You're good with a quick dip. Okay. Let's take a look.
Just put a toe in. You know, just a
little toe. Just a little toe. This one's actually really simple, and this one comes in from Claire, and I think it's worth answering. Hey, Waypoint crew. I was wondering if you had any particular advice for getting into games writing. Not necessarily just starting a blog to write, but what angles of critique and discussion would be best for independence going forwards? Culture, experience, perspectives, etc. Thanks. I think we've done a lot of talking about the future of media recently and like the sort of big picture, like where is media going? What is happening in games media? What's games journalism look like? But we haven't gotten into this like smaller thing, which is like, what are the trends in writing about games right now? What are the things that are happening? What should a young writer who is trying to make a name as just a writer be doing for themselves in terms of coverage and angles and story ideas? Any thoughts?
Be specific is the advice I've given to most people when they've asked me, whether it's along the lines of reporting or criticism. Often, if you are fortunate enough to somehow someday find yourself at an outlet, like you will be allowed to become a general purpose writer, because you'll have that skill set. But in order to get both to give yourself focus on, like, when you have an infinite amount of topics, when you're not being assigned something, when you're not being paid to write something, you can just write about whatever the hell you want. I think it's both useful as a focusing mechanism and as a way of being able to brand yourself. Is to say, like, I can speak to this thing specifically. So it's like, whether that is, you know, you want to speak about racing games or you want to talk about immersive sims, or like, it is finding your lane is a way of pitching yourself. Because if you can just say, I can review video games, and like, maybe you are such an insightful writer that like your general purpose writing like goes above, that is possible. I'm not saying it's, but I think you're making your life harder. And it's a lot like when someone comes to me and says, like, here is my expertise, right? Here's something I can show you, 10 pieces I've written about that shows I have a one it shows a commitment that like you can deep dive a topic. It shows there are a lot of qualities that speak more broadly to you as a writer, as a reporter, like whatever it is, if you can follow a specific topic and speak to it on multiple levels and from multiple angles. And I think that will also just allow you to figure out, like, what do I want to be writing about? Is like kind of picking something and then just going for it and kind of going at that from different angles. Just because I think that is useful, especially if you're going to try and like go to the point where you want to pitch like Waypoint or Kotaku or whoever, and like, hey, I want to write about esports. It's like, okay, like, why? Right. And it's like, well, look here, I did all these analysis of different matches, or I did a profile of like a really small, you know, person that isn't big in esports, but I was able to get access to them. And so then I did with that coup with the access I had. And I think focus is a huge part of getting started. At least that is that's been my advice when I've tried to impart to people.
Yeah, I think it's really great advice. I think that one of the hardest things to balance as someone who's trying to find their niche as a writer is knowing what the balance should be between, you know, having a deep specificity towards your work and showing that you're a generalist. Because often what the marketplace wants to reward is generalists. You know, when I was freelancing for GameSpot as a reviews writer, the fact that I could play pretty much anything meant that my name bubbled up a lot when it came to assigned reviews. Similarly, when I was doing freelance stuff at Paste, it was like, hey, can you cover this thing? And the answer was like, yes, of course I can cover it. Yes, of course. I want to be flexible as possible. I can cover anything you need. But even when you're doing that, right? And part of being a freelancer is saying yes to that stuff. Even when you're like, I think I can do it. Trust yourself. You probably can do it. And if you can't and it falls apart, it won't be the end of the world. Like, as long as you're communicative about it and that you're clear and like, okay, here's where it fell apart. Here's what happened. Here's where I need more resources. Can you connect me to the developer, the publisher, blah, 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 blah. But at the same time, I did my best to spend time carving out my lane and figuring out, okay, here are the things that when it really comes to my big pieces, people can expect, or even in a through line sense, all right, I'm going to be reviewing this project Cars. How can I still make that about something that isn't just the handling of the cars? Or is there a way I can talk about the handling of the cars that helps communicate who I am as a writer? And it is like, it's so shitty to be like, you always build your brand. Like, that is the worst thing to say out loud. It sticks in the back of my throat. I hate the word brand because, you know, it emerges from literally a hot piece of metal that you push into something to market as being owned. Like, it's a shitty connotation. It's bad.
But it's like, what do people think of when they like think of all, it's, I mean, if you want to just, it's like when people say, you know, Patrick Klubnik, they think like
scoops,
news and writing. Yep. Like, that is like, that's, you know, what I've worked on, that's my through line, even though I do lots of other things. Like, when they think of Austin Walker, like, they're gonna think of criticism, right, like, right. They think of like really like careful mediations on like race and right. Like culture and video games. Like, that is like a through line of your work, even when you have spoken to lots
even
of
when
other
I have
things
reviewed Sid Meier's Starships or whatever, right? It's like, okay,
or even like Monster Hunter World, right? Like, right. A game that sure. On its surface you would think would be completely separated from, like, you know, the quote-unquote, like, Austin Walker brand. Like, actually, you read that, and it's like, oh, we're going to speak to, like, colonialism. And, like, there are like, it's thinking through that lens. Like, what do you want to speak to? And then, like, even when you're doing general-purpose work, it's, like, finding ways to bring what you want to talk about in there. And often it's a very laborious exercise in making that not be, like, really blunt and bad and forced. And you're going to do all of those things. And even we do those things.
All the time.
All the time. And it's finding your way there, but
and
it's
having
it's,
good
it's
editors.
Thinking.
Thankfully, thank you to Danielle and Rob, who's in here for editing my stuff so often. And also, here's the other thing: it doesn't have to be super serious. Like, our things, I think, are examples are like rare. Yeah. It can be like, oh, I'm gonna be really funny. Like, I'm gonna be really clever. Like, that's so hard to do. And if you're someone,
and also there's it's exceedingly rare. Yes. You wanna go look and like why there's very little humor in video game criticism. It's not because people don't want to be funny. It's because they ain't funny. And like, there's just not that much. There's both not that much comedy in video games, and there's not that much comedy in video game writing. That, like, good satirical or insightful or clever and funny writing, like,
it's hard,
man. Like, if you want to be a comedian, you think being a comedian's too hard. Like, if you could be a funny writer, like, my guess is you'd be able to find somewhere, because there's no one in that lane is empty. There's just not much of it.
Totally.
So
think about that. It doesn't just have to be like, I'm gonna write about race, I'm gonna write about labor. It can be really specific to stylistic things. Danielle, did you
I was gonna say, also on the micro level, that specificity is really helpful when you're pitching as well.
We get
a lot of pitches and always through forever, and not just talking about Waypoint, but if you're an editor, you get a lot of pitches that are not very specific. They're generally about, here's the thing, I want to write about it. And people don't actually.
I'd like to write about
exactly.
X, and then there's like there's like 800 words. It's like, no.
Like, no, it's not going to do it, my friend.
It's got to be two lines. If you want to expand underneath, you can. Yes. But you got to be able to explain what you want. Like, it. I think what you're saying is that it kind of shows that you haven't necessarily fully thought through what you want to say.
Right.
You just kind of think you want to say something about a topic.
Totally.
Be super specific about what you want to say, how you're going to say it. Just be able to do that. And a lot of that is really, really hard, and it takes a really, really long time to actually come up with a great pitch. Great pitches are incredibly difficult. I still have an insanely hard time with them myself, thinking of how I want to cover things and finding angles on things I want to do. So even if you do this for a living, it's hard. It's always going to be hard. But putting in that time to understand what a really great pitch is as important, I think, to getting your foot in the door.
Danica, as someone who's writing more recently, have you thought about this stuff, or about, like, when you sit down to write something, kind of how do you organize your ideas and kind of begin to dig into something a little, like, you recently, one of my favorite pieces of yours recently was about how Monster Hunter kind of encouraged you to start, like, paying attention to certain mechanics and systems in a way that you would not traditionally do, which I think is, like, legitimately a really good piece. Or you did a preview on Yakuza 6 recently. I've really liked that stuff, but I'm curious for you, not that you've never written before in your life, obviously, but, like, you're kind of redoubling your effort with it right now. I'm curious what your thought process has been around that.
So my background in writing is, like, I used to write for an otaku magazine called Otaku USA, and I did, like, features on
shows. I had no idea you did that.
Yes.
That's really funny.
I wrote their cosplay column, and I did big, like, 1,500-word features in each magazine. And then I also wrote for Crunchyroll on, like, games or other things, like shows and stuff. I don't have a huge background in writing. I'm, like, still learning and figuring out my own voice. And I think for me, because I don't have this big background and I'm still kind of learning, I'm just trying to like be myself in my writing. And I think that comes across. And I think that's for the people who come back to me with feedback or talk to me about my writing. One of the things that I hear a lot is like, oh, your stuff is funny. And like you actually like just sound like yourself in your writing. And so that's just what I'm trying to do more of.
Yeah, that's I will say that has been definitely one of the best things for me is like one of the hardest things you can do is have a voice that is recognizable as the same like the Danica voice on a stream or on the podcast is totally your writing voice.
Right,
and that
right.
sounds on paper like it should be easy. Mm-hmm. It is so hard mm-hmm. to be conversational in writing. And so that's my other big tip is just like even if you don't have a specific angle, even if you don't have a specific like beat that you've figured out yet. If someone wants to try to get into gaming, like find the right blend of expertise and conversational tone and conversational voice. One of the things that puts me off a lot as a writer is when I can tell someone is writing from a position of expertise, but doesn't realize that they're writing for a wider audience. And that part of what that requires is like, hey, we're just like at a bar talking. Mm-hmm. And there are features where you should not have that tone. Right, you're doing a certain type of profile piece. You're doing a certain sort of reported story that has some like weightier subject matter or, you know, you're doing something where the conversational tone would actually slow things down because you'd have to take a lot of space to explain something really complex mm-hmm. that really just needs to be really tight and focused. But by and large, one of the things that really connects people to a writer is that conversational tone, that feeling like you're being told a story, that feeling that like you're at the campfire to go back to where yep. the water tastes like wine and like, and you're sharing a campfire story in a sense. Right. Yeah. So try to push for that. It can be hard to know when you have it, but
yeah, I think that it also helps that like, I have like Danielle editing my pieces too, because like even in the Monster Hunter piece, she added a line or two that when I went back and read it, I was like, oh, whoa, this sounds really good. I'm going to consider this for next time, you know? And like, I don't totally. Have, I approach writing from a more, I guess, emotional standpoint than analytical, because I just don't, the way that I consume games and media, and I've talked about this before, is I don't consume them in this like analytical way where I'm thinking about how this feels compared to XYZ mm-hmm. on my hands. I'm thinking about how it feels like for my brain, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a totally valid way to go about this. And like, I'm as the EIC of Waypoint, super excited to have you write more. And as for the person who wrote in, just start writing. Like, make yourself do it. Otherwise, it won't happen.
Every day. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Every day. Or as every day as you can, yeah. right? Like, I think the everyday advice
you probably have to
is
work a job
valuable.
And, every day, but, without, exactly. that every day without crunching.
Yeah, right, yes, exactly. There you
regularly,
go.
Regularly, but that's just really do good. It. Like, you
as,
have
as
to do
as
it
you
to
can
do
can
it.
Without
you do
crunching.
It.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Eat your
exactly.
prunes, make it regular, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Like that there advice?
It is. Okay. Oh, yeah. Why yeah. not? All right. I'm going to do one more. This one says quick in the title, so I'm sure it's going to be a quick
I'm
one. This
sure.
is questions, period, quick questions. This one comes in from Chris in Vancouver, who says, hi, is free will an illusion? Is it an illusion like how we have choices in Fallout 4 dialogue trees? Is there a place for hate when people or characters have no agency in their actions? Chris from Vancouver. P.S. I like reading your web zone. I hope it stays for a long time.
I remember this question. I'm
this
like, wait,
one.
we sent each other this question.
It's a
like,
good one.
We
posted
it's
it in our Discord. Yeah,
there was a beautiful song on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend about that recently. It's called "Nothing Is Ever Anyone's Fault."
Oh, by Nathaniel. Yeah, that was a great song. That was a great song.
I feel like that.
You
talk that's
about
where you
season
should go
three of that show. By the way,
for the answers. Oh my God, yes, Next we should have a Waypoint 101 on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Very good show. It's a very good show.
If you two want to sit around a microphone, I'm
hell
not,
yes.
I wish I had the time to watch Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
It's real good.
All right, that's our answer. Is go look up that
go
song from
Crazy
Ex-Girlfriend. If you have questions, you can send them into gaming@vice.com. Use the subject question so that we see it, and it goes into a pile of other questions that say things like, I like your web zone. You don't have to like reading our web zone, but I appreciate it if you do. I appreciate that you're listening. As always, I appreciate if you go to iTunes or Stitcher or wherever it is you're listening and give us a review. That helps spread the word. We don't do any advertising for this show or anything like that. So helping to get the word out about this show is always a positive thing. As always, I'd like to thank Bowen for letting us use the track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Find out more about that at waypoint.zone/BOEN. You can follow us at Waypoint, twitter.com/Waypoint, facebook.com/WaypointVice, youtube.com/WaypointVice, facebook.com/WaypointVice. Did I already say Facebook? I did.
Yeah.
Twitch.tv/Waypoint. I just realized there's a bunch of stuff on YouTube that we actually didn't talk at all about the fact that I saw Far Cry 5. But there was a Far Cry 5.
It's on YouTube. Go look at it.
It's on YouTube now. I guess here's the thing. There was never any podcast. I had originally like, oh, it's fine that we're not going to talk about it in the podcast because we already talked about it in a separate podcast article. But I didn't put that article in the feed. We didn't do a read of it, which is fine. But so I did a preview of Far Cry 5. I did an interview with the creative director and one of the consultants on Cults. So those are up on waypoint.vice.com. And yes, we did a first look at the game. That is now up over on our YouTube channel, so go look at that. Lots of things to say about that game. A lot of thoughts. Very curious about how that thing shakes out. You can follow me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Danielle?
At Danielle R.I.
Danica?
At Danica Herod.
And Patrick Klepek.
You find me at Patrick Klepek. We're pointing out that Donald Trump's brother is on the board of ZeniMax will cause lots of GamerGators to come at you because apparently it's inappropriate
Gamer
to point
Gators?
Out
coming
that Donald
after
Trump,
Patrick?
Who claims...
What? I think it was
Daniel Klepek.
Daniel Klepek. Daniel Klepek.
Daniel Klepek.
Patrick.
God damn it. All right, that's going to do it for us. I'm going to go watch whatever. There was a meltdown apparently while we were recording today.
Oh, buddy. Sam Sundberg. Oh boy.
We're going to roll right into our politics cast.
Let's just call up Sam Nunberg.
Let's get him on the line.
He's calling in everyone else right now.
Yeah, we'll say we're from Vice Waypoint. Don't mention video games. Just say, did Trump ever mention Skyrim ever? Please let us know. All right, that's going to do it for us. Catch us all week doing streams, and we'll be back on Friday for another episode of Waypoint Radio.
Be good at it.
Peace.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.